on 91.3 FM. Your voice in the morning.
10 minutes after 7 a.m. this morning. If you've just joined us, welcome into it. Good to have you with us. Thanks to those of you that have been sending through your messages. We will be getting to it in a bit. But to move along now to our next feature, which is basically, you know, having a look at the SANDF deployment over the past 2 months, but also now that we know the extension will take us to March 2020. Yesterday, we saw President Cyril Ramaphosa approve the extended deployment of the South African National Defence Force. But the Western Cape government has also called for measurement tools to track its impact. But to tell us a bit more this morning, we are joined online by Helmut Heitman, military as well as defence analyst. Helmut, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, General.
Now, of course, you know, it hasn't been very easy to measure the success rate and the impact that the SANDF has had in these communities over the past 2 months, has it?
No, I think it was short to start with, and in any event, it's never going to be easy to decide this. The real issue there is always the long term one. You know, while the soldier is standing on a street corner, nobody's going to be murdering anybody in that street corner. But the minute he walks away, what happens? So the period is always short. I'm not sure any measurement concept even was put in place to start with. But having said that, that is not something the Defence Force can do. This is not their area of expertise. This is something that the central government, state government, the local municipal authorities, and the police need to do. They need to come up with a set of measurement tools and then do it that way. That also should be governing the employment of the Defence Force.
Just to backtrack for a bit, in the first place, he was, you know, using the SANDF as a tool to sort of combat the gang violence, a step in the right direction.
Well, certainly the police seemed to have felt so. Well, I'm always surprised that a police with over 190,000 people needs a 38,000 strong army to pull their chestnuts out of the fire every time something goes wrong. But I think as long as we understand that the army cannot solve the problem, all the army can do is buy time and provide some extra bodies to help the police, for instance, to protect investigation teams when they go in. So they can, instead of having to send, say, six detectives to go and do something, you can send one or two with an army escort. So you can spread your detective teams a bit more widely to gather intelligence and then also to do investigations. That's what the military can do. They can't solve the problem. It's not a military problem. It's not even a police problem, really. It's a socio-economic problem that the police can also only sit on and buy time for other things to be done.
When we speak about other things to be done, we speak about socioeconomic problems. These are not sort of new ideas that we're speaking about. These are ongoing issues that we're speaking about. We saw it being highlighted at the Crime Summit once again over the past weekend. When will this stop being a talk shop?
That's a good question. But to be fair to government at all levels, when you've got a shrinking economy, it's difficult to do something about problems like massive unemployment, which then lead further into things like gangsterism. And once gangs are established, and particularly in the narcotics trade, it becomes exceedingly difficult to root them off because they make a lot of money. If you look at Latin America, some of the narcotics groups at one stage had an annual turnover higher than the GDP of some small countries. It's difficult for police service to deal with them. The only solution is really long-term. You've got to get the economy going. That's one aspect, which is beyond the ability of any single department to do. You've got to make sure that your policing is effective and efficient, and it seems to be effective and efficient. You've got to get community leaders aboard, which is going to be difficult if community leaders who are negative towards the gangs maybe get assassinated, which is what's happened in other countries. Mm. You've got to get NGOs involved. It's got to be a comprehensive thing. There, what the Cape government is saying is perfectly correct. It's got to be a comprehensive thing. It's got to be driven from the highest possible level. It's got to be intelligence-based. And the outcome has to be at the socioeconomic level.
Now, of course, you know, whilst we're using the SANDF, so to speak, to buy time for everyone else to get their ducks in a row, do you think, you know, going forward over the next few months, taking us to March 2020, that their sort of service will be effective in a sort of a different way, that a different plan might come into effect for them to be a bit more active in this regard?
Look, I would hope it's going to be effective, but, you know, the army can't really be very active in this business because what do you want them to do? They can't go around shooting everybody on site. There needs to be a proper plan in place. Somebody, if it hasn't been done already, and it should have been, there needs to be a proper appreciation of the situation, a real analysis of what's going on, who's in the zoo, what are the underlying problems, who are the friendly people one can maybe draw in who are not negatively linked to the gangs, and then decide how to handle this. And then focus on one area after another. Clean it out, get things going, get the proper policing rule of law established in the area, and then start building, using NGOs primarily, using the local community. Do something to get people somehow employed that have something to do other than sit around and get bored and join a gang.
Now we speak
with
about
6 months in hand now, maybe there's enough time to do this properly.
We hope so. You know, we speak about our local communities. We speak about the NGOs. I mean, we just heard our previous guests say that we have the CPFs that are in these communities, but the CPFs themselves, you know, don't play together. They've got differing opinions. Some are for the SANDF, some are against the SANDF, some just don't care. How do we get everyone to, you know, sort of work cohesively?
If I knew that, I'd make a living herding cats. It's a good check. I mean, you really need to get everybody focused on the fact that at the end of the day, it is going to be a problem for everybody. Gangsters are there. They're not going to stay in one place. They affect the entire community, not just the community which they are. Mm. They affect the wider communities around them. And it's difficult, but you've got to find people who are prepared to stand up and say, this won't go on any longer. And then they, if necessary, have to be given protection. You also have to find out in situations where, say, a gang is doing the welfare job, which in some cases are, as they did in Medellin, for instance, in Colombia, then the state, all the local authorities have to step in and take over that role, which is their role in the first place, so that you can get the positive elements, shall we call them, of the gangs out of the system. They can do that, they win over adherence that way, sort of the flip side of threatening people. They can do it because of the high turnover they make out of narcotics. One issue, I mean, if one wants to be really contrarian, you'd say legalize narcotics.
Mm.
Because it's cheap stuff. Mm. You legalize them. How many people really inject themselves in something that wasn't a challenge, that wasn't an adventure? And immediately what would happen is that the income stream to the gangs would be gone. They'd be reduced to petty crime, and that's not really exciting for anybody. Of course, with other issues, you can't legalize narcotics. It's not that easy either.
Yeah. Now, of course, you know, if we take it back to government, you know, it seems like our communities, unfortunately, seem to be led by the interventions that government makes. Do you think perhaps government doesn't have the perfect understanding of exactly what's going on the ground in terms of these interventions that they do put in place, which seem to be effective but not effective enough?
Quite probably. I mean, there's been so much fooling around with the senior appointments, even middle-ranking appointments of police all over the country, particularly in the Western Cape, that you've discouraged the honest policemen. You've taken, in some cases, taken away people with the experience, the insight, replaced them with people who haven't got it. They've got to start the learning curve at the bottom again. We've gone away in the whole of South Africa from moved away, really, from the Bobby on the Beat concept, which makes a lot of gang type activity very difficult. Difficult to get back there now. I mean, gangs with assault rifles are going to shoot you if you're not wearing it, and kill you if you're not wearing a bulletproof jacket. Mm. But we need to start pushing back in that direction. I mean, the problem is because we don't have the Bobby on the beat, we haven't got the continuity of policing in a lot of areas that we should have.
Mm.
Then you lose track of what is actually happening on the ground. And some poor man gets appointed as station commander or district commissioner or whatever, and we expect him within a matter of months to know exactly what's going on and get hold of the grip on the problem. That's physically impossible. You can't do that. So we need to get back to continuity. We need to get back to much closer cooperation between the police, the NGOs, local governments. And then, we're necessarily bringing the military to buy time to get things off the ground. It's a fire brigade. It's nothing else.
All right. Well, Helmuth, thanks so much for joining us this morning and sharing your insight on the matter. We do appreciate your time in this regard.
Pleasure.
Thank you. And that was Helmuth Heitmann, military and defense analyst, speaking to us there.